Welcome to episode 20 of the Zach Kuhn Show. The big 2-0. We made it. Nobody thought we'd make it. But here we are, episode 20, going strong. Today's guest is Stephen Galanis, the founder and CEO of Cameo. Now, I gotta tell you, it feels like everyone and their mother is joining Cameo right now. Like, every artist I'm talking with is saying, oh, I just got on Cameo. You gotta get on Cameo. I'm loving Cameo. I know more people now who are receiving Cameos that are sending them to me that are freaking out about them. It feels like I've never heard more about Cameo than in this moment right now. It was such a thrill to talk with Stephen. It was such a great conversation. I was so excited for it. And this is a great episode. If you're an entrepreneur, if you're a manager, if you're an artist, there are so many good takeaways here about fan engagement, about building a tech company. I mean, I learned a ton. It was so awesome talking with Stephen. Okay, that's it. I'm not going to give too much away. Let's just get into it. Here we go. Episode 20, Stephen Galanis, Cameo. Let's dive in.
I like the background staircase. Looks very nice. I always like seeing what background people choose to be in front of for Zooms. So, staircase looks with a little stone over here. Yeah. Nice aesthetic.
A lot of different options. You know, you can go with. But staircase is classic.
Absolutely, I love it. So, I was just on Cameo, clicking through some things, and I saw Carol Baskin's now on Cameo. It's totally crazy. How does Carol, does she reach out to you? Does she just jump on and one day you realize she's on the platform? How does Carol get on Cameo?
Well, the funny thing was I reached out to her immediately. So within the first week of Tiger King kind of blowing up, we got like most of the cast on, and I reached out to her and her PR team was like, absolutely not. And I'm like, you can do it for charity. Like, this feels like a no-brainer.
Members say yes or?
Oh yeah. We basically have everyone now except for Joe Exotic on Cameo. And they were doing well. You know, people are making, you know, five figures a month on Cameo from the Tiger King cast. And Carol, we just thought would kill it. And it would all be for Big Cat Rescue for charity. And her PR team was like, absolutely not. You know, I think they thought maybe she get trolled a lot or something like that. But bottom line, she came on. I think, you know, she made you know, mid six figures on Cameo in her first month, and that's all for charity.
Wow, holy cow. I know, I was going through some of her videos and they're outrageous. They're unbelievable. Yeah. So I think the first time I learned about Cameo, I was trying to think back to when I first learned about it, and I'm pretty sure it was from The Ellen Show. It was seeing that clip on The Ellen Show. She did a bunch of stuff with Cameo. Yeah. And then I think Stern as well. Were those moments that you guys put together and tried to orchestrate, or was that supernatural? How did those moments come together?
Just happened.
It just happened.
In fact, today I got a text that Howard Stern did a 20-minute segment on Cameo today, and they now.
Oh my God!
He was doing this constantly last year. Ellen just started doing it. John Oliver did a thing on Last Week Tonight. We just had Conan O'Brien and Jimmy Fallon both did talk about Cameo within the last week on their shows, and we've had no involvement. It's just gotten in the zeitgeist.
Crazy. I mean, I think a lot of startups always talk about traction, and it's not always the best idea that wins. It's the one that's able to get the most traction. And with your product, just feels like such a sticky thing because it promotes itself, and because you had such, you know, celebrity endorsements early on. Was that ever something you had to struggle with traction early on with this product, or did the traction part seem to almost come a little naturally?
Well, in our marketplace, we always believed that supply would beget its own demand. So unlike Uber, where like a driver can't like market their own rider, you know, get their own riders, or on Airbnb, you know, a house doesn't like attract its own renters. You know, the thing that's cool about Cameo is that our talent have hundreds of thousands or millions of followers on Instagram, on TikTok, and Twitter. And just by virtue of being on Cameo, they can let their fans know and turn their followers into our customers for free. And that really starts the flywheel. And then on top of that, you know, we've always said that every Cameo is a commercial for the next. So if I buy for you, you share to Instagram, your friends see it, they learn about it, you know, they're commenting, they're tagging other people, they're DMing it to somebody else, and that starts the flywheel on the consumer side.
Totally. And now, I mean, I'm pumped to see that you guys are, you know, there's some killer Nashville acts like Maren Morris is now on it. Walker Hayes is on it. I mean, the Nashville community, I feel like, especially within the past couple months, everyone's like, oh yeah, just got on Cameo. Everyone's talking about it. Was that a community that was, what was it like trying to get that community on board? Was it a little different? Because I think Nashville can sometimes live in a little bit of a bubble, for better or worse, and sometimes penetrating and getting into it can sometimes be a little bit complicated. Was that something that you guys experienced with Nashville?
Look, we always felt like country was a vertical that just made a lot of sense. You think of how country music's rise up, they start playing at a little bar in Nashville or a little bar in Austin. You know, they have that really intimate relationship with their fans. I remember being in Cabo a couple years ago, and you know, Toby Keith just like started playing at Cabo Wabo, played like a private concert for like like 50 people. He just happened to be at the bar and he just wanted to get up. And I think country just has that more than any other vertical in music. But look, we've been, you know, we've had country artists on the platform since 2017 when we launched. I remember in 2017 going to Nashville, like going to CAA, going to some of the record labels down there, talking about what we were doing. And, you know, and just like anything else, when people started coming on and have a great experience, they tell their friends. So I think the high NPS, the high net promoter score of our product enables the talent to kind of tell their friends that, hey, this is great. I like it. I'm making good money. I'm enjoying connecting with my fans. It's really helping me build my brand. And then, you know, then it's just kind of like stacking brick by brick, you know, good people having great experiences, and then those great experiences turn into more great people having great experiences, and it just kind of builds on top of each other.
Totally. Kind of like, you know, like Spotify thinks like, okay, we're going to go into Russia. We need to break India. You know, they have their markets that they're trying to go into. Do you guys think about like segments of celebrities, like let's go into Nashville and get that market, and then let's get, you know, celebrities in India, and like, you know, do you segment it that way, or has it all kind of come in like a world, like, you know, and the floodgates open?
Like in the earliest days when we were only athletes on the platform, it started with like, hey, let's get, you know, basketball players. Then it was like, let's get a player from every NBA team. And then let's get like the legend retired players from those teams. Let's get the Hall of Famers from those teams. Let's get the new, you know, players that are rookies that are joining the team. So let's get the fans, let's get the announcers. Now let's get the coaches, like college basketball. In the last couple of weeks, we've gotten, you know, John Calipari from Kentucky and Bill Self from Kansas. Like two of the three biggest coaches in college basketball are now on Cameo. So now it's like, let's go get Coach K. Let's go get Roy Williams. And now their peers are on. So they're going to do it because, you know, they're at a competitive disadvantage if they're not doing it.
And FOMO, they can't be left out.
Exactly. And it's just, you know, that's kind of what really starts to build hype.
I really want to see Dolly Parton on the platform. Speaking of Nashville, yeah. I feel like she'd be amazing.
For sure.
Absolutely. You know,
we believe there's like 6 million people on Earth that could be on Cameo, as currently stated, and we have 40,000, so it's pretty early.
Absolutely. For someone in the Nashville community, like to be on Cameo, what's the earning potential on the platform for a medium celebrity, for a medium artist? What's the potential to make on it? And also, I'm curious, for someone to commission off a Cameo, you know, is that amount of income available on the platform?
Well, I think there's a couple of different ways to look at it. On Cameo, there's a few different determinations of how much you're gonna make, right? And I think it really starts with like willingness. So there's people that come on Cameo and they probably charge too much money, and if they're too expensive, they're not gonna get booked. A really good example, not in the Nashville world, but in the rap world, Snoop Dogg and Lil Jon joined Cameo the same day. Lil Jon charged $2,500, Snoop Dogg charged $420, right? So both of them like charged this fee, and then when they both were new and people are looking at the hip hop category, the rappers, and they see them next to each other, like you go Snoop for $420 all day over Lil Jon for $2,500. So Snoop ended up making over $100,000 this first month, and Lil Jon never got booked, right? So pricing is really an arbiter of willingness a lot of times. And we try to get people to like throttle, like how many do you want to do? Like, let's try to work with you to do a manageable amount. Because if you were zero, you'd get booked too much. And if you're infinity, you wouldn't get booked at all. So it's all about finding the equilibrium. So I think Yeah, the people that tend to do really well are the people that have a big following, that are highly engaged with their following. Their fans are buying their merch. Their fans are going to all their shows. You know, they're downloading their songs. They're buying their records and all that kind of stuff. And they're putting themselves at a price that their fans can afford. So I think that more than anything is really what is a determination of how well you're going to do on Cameo. And if you do that, I mean, we have a lot of people on Cameo that make five figures a month, which is, that's great income, especially in a world where people aren't, there's no gigs happening, like no all live music shut down. You know, music, I think, has been hit particularly hard because so much of the revenue comes from concerts, and that's not happening. And nobody's really found a great way to like have that same concert experience over Twitch or like over any of these emerging platforms that are coming up. And musicians, like their fan bases, they're so intimate with them. They're missing the meet and greets. They're missing like all of those things that were just kind of table stakes for them. And at the highest end, I mean, there's people that make six figures a month on Cameo, right? So it just depends on how big you are, how willing you are. And then I think the best people we see on Cameo, they just make the best cameos. Michael Franti is this singer that I got from my mom recently. And his Cameo is the best I've ever seen. He's the best person on Cameo making videos. You know, he sings, he's got the guitar out, he kills it. And when people share that content and it's amazing, then that makes other people want to book.
Totally. How often do you use the platform? Are you constantly gifting cameos to people? It's like, do you guys even need sweatshirts and hats and merch? It's like you just gift a cameo.
Yeah. I mean, we have great merch. I'm not wearing any today because I feel like I'm doing laundry for the first time in a long time, and you know, all my Cameo shirts are dirty. So this is rare you're catching me without some Cameo swag on. But I will say that, you know, most 85% of them are gifts. I've probably bought as many Cameos as anybody. You know, I've anyone, like I know my mom, whatever holiday it is, you know, her birthday or Valentine's Day, Mother's Day, like her friends always want to see who, you know, who's Stephen gonna get for, you know, for his mom, for, you know, so she could share to Facebook and show off to her friends of like that new Cameo person. So yeah, I've bought a lot, but so a lot of other people, luckily.
Totally. I mean, I think one of the things interesting about Cameo is, you know, I've heard you say that there was a time where the most requested person on Cameo was David Dobrik, which is sort of, I mean, now he's sort of becoming more known, but he's not exactly a mainstream celebrity. He almost feels like he's your celebrity. Like if you're a fan of David Dobrik, it feels like there's, you know, he's your guy. Like you feel like, you know, there's a personal relationship where I feel like you maybe don't have that same feeling with like a Taylor Swift or a Billie Eilish because they're so much more mainstream. So I feel like there's more of a connection.
I think just in general, social and you know, platforms like TikTok and SoundCloud and YouTube and like everybody's not just watching ABC, NBC and CBS. Like back then, if you were not a network TV star, like you, nobody knew about you, right? If you weren't with a certain record label, nobody knew about you. Now you can have a chance the rapper like blow up like through SoundCloud and through, you know, just kind of like word of mouth grassroots because technology has just enabled like all this, you know, new distribution to happen. And I think there's something like music probably more than any other vertical. Like you always hear about people like, oh, I was a fan of that band before they blew up. And then, then people, like when a Billie Eilish like blows up, then it's kind of like you get the people that are like mad, almost mad that their biggest star like blew up. People love the undiscovered artist. And in many ways, like maybe you go to Lollapalooza and you catch, you know, you catch a band like doing some set on like a side stage at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And then they become, you know, they become somebody that you guys just, you know, you love. And if someone was at that show with you, if you book a cameo from that person, that's actually more impactful than if you got them Snoop Dogg or someone that's just like more mainstream famous.
Totally. I mean, I've heard you say on many occasions, you know, there's about 5 million people in the world who'd be on Cameo or 6 million. How do you guys come up with that number? Like, that's so interesting to me. You know, where does that number come from?
We look at how many people have over 25,000 followers or more on Instagram as like one proxy, and then just assume, you know, and I think there's like 2 million or 3 million people in that bucket. And then we just assume that there's probably like other social networks out there. Like there's things in China, there's things in South Korea, there's, you know, things in Brazil. So there's like some subset of people that are like big enough to be on Cameo that might not hit that follower threshold. And for us, we've seen great product market fit, for example, with like bit characters from like really big shows. So if you remember the show Silicon Valley.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
Russ Henneman, right? He has like 5,000 followers on Instagram, but he's someone that makes like, you know, five figures a month on Cameo. So there's people that are under the follower threshold, but because they were like a key role in a beloved show, they can probably do well. So that's how we think about market sizing it. But two things that we believe fundamentally are that there are more famous people on Earth today than ever before, and fame, people are more famous now than they've ever been. So when Lil Nas X did Old Town Road, he now, if even if he's a one-hit wonder, he's gonna have, you know, tens of millions of followers for the rest of his life, and the followers are sticky. Like the one-hit wonder in 2020, like, will always have a fan base. Where Chumbawamba, when they made Tub Thumper 20 years ago, like, who knows where they are now, because that happened pre-social.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening and hope you're enjoying the show. Some of you may know that I run an industry newsletter called the Nashville Briefing. Really takes you to the front row of everything happening in our industry. And if you want to learn more about it, you can go to nashvillebriefing.com to subscribe. Also, if you're enjoying this show and specifically this episode, please feel free to give us a 5-star review on your podcast listening platform. Thanks so much. Now back to the show.
Now, I know, you know, something that you also hear in the people say in the music industry is that it's sometimes hard to break through in a different way because, for example, like the Beatles played the Ed Sullivan Show in the 60s and 70 million people turned in. To get that many eyeballs today is so much harder because there's so much more competition. There's so many more platforms. You know, does that come into play? Like
that's objectively untrue. Like, it is objectively untrue that it is harder to blow up today than ever. But it is objectively true that there's more competition, right? But it is, because there's more competition, like, it's actually easier for, like, you don't have to have signed with some person. Like, Justin Bieber blew up on YouTube, right? And just because he's more, I think that's big. The other thing too is I think that the monolith of like the A plus list star is gonna get less and less important as time goes on. Because I think that, you know, because of, you know, Instagram stories or because of TikTok or because of YouTube, you know, people kind of subscribe to like the channels they want or the people they want and or like the Spotify playlist that they love. And there's not like this monolith of like the Ed Sullivan Show, like, or, you know, you think about consumer products. It used to be if you got on Oprah's, you know, show.
That would do it.
But today there's just like, there's so many, it's so much more niche and it's like, there's so many different ways to blow up. So it's easier to blow up, but there's more competition than ever. But net net, like, there's more people that will blow up, you know, today than there were in the 60s, no question.
Totally. And what do you say to someone who maybe feels like, oh, Cameo isn't my brand, or it feels a little cheesy. I don't know, like, if an artist is worried about their brand image on the platform or that it, maybe it's not the best fit for them, you know, is there something that you say to them, or, you know, is it the right fit for everyone? Are there some people where maybe, you know, it's not going to be the best?
I think there's a couple of things. I think we've found product market fit for people who are more famous than they are rich. And I think that most people, like on Spotify, the top 1% of artists make 99% of all the ad revenue.
Right,
the top 1% of artists make 99% of all the touring revenue. The top 3% of YouTubers makes 97% of all the ad revenue. So there's basically like, there's these people that are like pretty famous, but like they might be way more well known than they are financially well off. And I think that's where we found product market fit. I think for the Taylor Swift or the Billie Eilish, they're actually like more rich than they are famous, as crazy as that sounds, because like they just have so much money coming in. So like maybe for them, it's not going to work. But I always talk about Cameo having product market fit. If you turn over a $1 bill and you look at the pyramid with the eye on top, right? If you think about that, I think we've got product market fit from the second you hit your 15 minutes of fame all the way to the most famous person on Earth. And then we also have product market fit when you were the most famous person on Earth. And then like when you're, you know, when you're not anymore, right? Like Nelly or like, you know, some of the rappers like on the platform, like they might've been, you know, they might've been the biggest, but like only Jay-Z from that era, Puff Daddy, like stuck, you know? And,
right,
and totally. A lot of other people are on Cameo and there's still people that care about them, but like they're back more famous than they are rich. So, and then on top of that, for talent, our value prop is that you're getting paid to become more famous. When you make a cameo for someone, they become a bigger fan of you than they ever were before. And there are people who are not looking for more fame and they're not looking for more money. So yeah, for those people, we probably don't have product market fit, and that's fine. But I think there might be 500 of those people in the world, and there's 5 million of everybody else.
Totally. Okay, so let's go back to the beginning. So you're from Chicago. You went to Duke. After college, you start day trading, essentially, right? And then you end up creating a movie production company. How did that come together? That seems very intimidating, because you were, I'm assuming, in your 20s. That seems like not many 20-year-olds take that on. How did you find yourself in a position to put a movie production company together?
So my uncle's a movie producer. You know, right around that time, his movie Lone Survivor came out, and I rented a theater, and I got a bunch of the guys that I traded with. I was a options trader at the Chicago Board of Trade. And I rented a theater, and I had them all kind of watch the premiere of this movie. And
why motivated you to do that? To help your uncle out, or you just thought it'd be a cool thing to do? Or
it was supposed to be a great movie. I was like, hey, like, cool, my uncle's got this movie, like, let's go watch it. It's just,
yeah.
It's like, why would you take someone to a concert? It's the same thing.
Totally.
We did that, and I remember like a bunch of the guys at the time were like, hey, why are you here trading with us, and why aren't you in LA being a movie producer? So I ended up talking to my uncle, and I'm like, hey, I've got a lot of guys that would be willing to back me. Like, is there any way like I could get into your next deal? And I ended up raising some money for a film project, that was trying to remake Baywatch, basically, with Dolph Lundgren as David Hasselhoff, played for 2 years on like WGN, a terrible show, never watch it. But that was my first foray into production. And you know, I'm someone that always loves putting deals together, and I found, especially in Chicago, there was like this willingness of people to get involved with it in entertainment, but like they had no access to it. And I think this kind of is a big reason why Cameo worked in Chicago. I actually don't think if this business was started in LA or San Francisco or New York, it actually would have gotten off the ground. I think Chicago, like, people there are huge fans. They love their sports teams. They love their actors. They love their singers. They love their celebrities. But like, in many ways, because we're in Chicago, we're like farther away from them. Like, you're not walking down, you know, like when you're in Rodeo Drive in LA, like, you never know, like, you're gonna run into, like, it's not who are you gonna run into famous people, it's like, who are you gonna see that day?
And how famous?
But it's not that way in Chicago, and they care about people just as much, and maybe because they don't have the access, there was like this need to like, hey, you know, it was always cool growing up, like, some kid at their bar mitzvah got like a Bulls player to show up. Like, I just felt like that was part of the culture there. And that's a reason why, you know, why I think my career in entertainment like started in Chicago.
And did you, you know, at that point, you know, you go to work at LinkedIn, were you kind of done with the movie production stuff? Like, you know, I'm sure if movie production was your absolute passion and dream, I'm sure you could have done that and become a superstar at it.
It was never
just reached. Yeah.
It was never my dream ever. I'm actually not like, I like watching movies, but I don't know actors really. Like, I'm much more of like a deal person. I enjoyed like the financial side of it, but I had nothing to do with the creative side, if that made sense. So for me, it was just like, hey, here's like a cool business that I can be doing. I like movies, I like sports, like, so that all kind of built upon what would become Cameo. But within LinkedIn, you know, I love social media and I love finance. LinkedIn was a really cool move for me because I got to work on a team at LinkedIn that was selling into financial institutions and trying to get them to use the platform better.
So now, you know, if a young entrepreneur comes to you and maybe they're out of college or whatever it is, and they're saying, you know, should I go get, I know I want to be an entrepreneur. Should I be an entrepreneur now? Or should I go and work in a company first? Any thoughts about going into a company first or going straight into it, being an entrepreneur? You kind of went like back and forth a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I was talking on a podcast about this yesterday. I think it just depends on if you have an idea that you're just super passionate about. If there's a space that you love, even if it doesn't seem like there's a business there, there's nothing in the world you can do that teaches you entrepreneurship better than just starting a company. So, you know, I actually think that I probably spent about 4 extra years trading than I should have. Like I was an entrepreneur, like ran my own company, was making like a lot of money in college. And then all of a sudden I was like a clerk at the Chicago Board of Trade, you know, making 35 grand a year, getting people coffee and like lunch. And for me, that was like a terrible period in my life because I might've learned everything I needed to, all the like major life lessons I might've learned in like the first 2 weeks of the job. And then everything else was just kind of like, you know, you're doing it for the money or you're doing it for like the prestige of like being on this career track. But, you know, I would tell a young entrepreneur, like, get started. Now, I do think there's certain companies where you can go and like meet other smart people. And for me, that was LinkedIn, where like there's like probably 6 or 7 key people at Cameo that like were people I worked with at LinkedIn. And then when I had the idea, these were smart people I knew I wanted to work with again. So when I left, they followed me and that helped spring a network. And I also think when you're raising money, you know, saying you're ex LinkedIn or saying you're ex Goldman Sachs or saying you're ex, you know, Twitch or whatever, or your ex Rock Nation, right? It shows you, like, it gives you a little bit of experience. But I would always tell people, never take a job for money earlier in your career. Take it because you're learning a skill set that you think could be valuable if you want to be an entrepreneur.
Absolutely. Okay, so you're at LinkedIn, and then, you know, you're at your grandmother's funeral, and you're driving back, and you're with your soon-to-be co-founder, and this is your eureka moment. What happens in this moment? Like, how do you come up with the idea for Cameo?
Well, I'll show you the video that literally he showed me that gave us the idea. I'll pull it up.
I love it.
So the context, Martin was telling me, you know, he was my production partner, and the movie business had kind of slowed down a bit because Netflix was changing the model that we were working. So like the deal slowed down. I went to go work at LinkedIn. He became an NFL agent. His idea was if he became an NFL agent, maybe he could back into signing the next Rock. He could find, you know, like a big, you know, defensive lineman with a big personality and make him an action star. And he signed this guy, Cassius Marsh. He wasn't able to monetize him at all. And he was losing a ton of money, you know, training him and flying him around, like all that type of stuff. And he could not get him an endorsement deal no matter what. And he got him in some movies, but he wasn't like being a lead. So basically we had this idea that like someone like Cash was more famous than he was rich, and he wasn't able to really monetize outside of his contract. But anyways, so Martin had a good buddy, Brandon, who had just become a father. He was working at Nike, and Martin got Cassius Marsh, this player, to congratulate him on becoming a dad.
Say congratulations on Maverick, and you know, I'm sure if he gets your athletic ability, he'll be playing for the Seahawks one day, man. Go Hawks.
So I saw that video. You don't have to know Brandon, you don't have to know Cassius Marsh, but it objectively just looked cool, and we just had the feeling like this is the new autograph, and you know, and we're like, let's sell those.
So okay, wait, so you go back to LinkedIn, and you were kind of bootstrapping together in LinkedIn. And then, you know, what, like, the first Cameo, because I've heard you tell this story, the first Cameo, like, you know, it didn't really go well. I mean, it ended up, there was a problem with the site or something. But how do you get to that point where you're up and running? I think you had one person on who's willing to do a Cameo. Like, how do you get from this eureka moment driving back from your grandmother's funeral to that first Cameo?
Well, it started with, I dropped Martin off at the airport. He called me the second he got through security. And he's like, you got to get out to LA tomorrow. And I just called my boss on LinkedIn. I'm like, I need a couple days off. So I flew to LA. I met with Martin. We had a bunch of margaritas at Soho House in LA. We started dreaming up this marketplace where for X amount of money, you can do Y activity with Z person. And then, you know, for the next few months, I was probably the worst person at LinkedIn. Like, I wasn't concentrated on my job. Martin would call me. We'd just go riffing on ideas for like an hour. You know, I felt like I was missing customer calls. It was just, you know, my heart was just set. Like, I knew in my mind I needed to do it. And it wasn't until a colleague of mine from LinkedIn, you know, on New Year's Day that year was like, Steven, this idea is too big. Like, if somebody else does this and becomes a billionaire, could you live with yourself? And honestly, the answer was no, that like, I never went back. And then I just, you know, you kind of burn the boats, you jump in. I went to 1871, which is the big tech accelerator in Chicago. You know, Martin was out trying to get talent. Devin was out trying to get tech. And I just, like, I'm going to go learn how to build a tech company. And I took a lot of lessons, got a lot of mentors, you know, just started honing my craft and pitching and, you know, conceptualizing the name and starting to be really meticulous about what was the brand that would become Cameo, like what would that look like and what would it feel like? And you know, and then we got the first person on. We saw the reaction video that the dad sent back to us. And the second we saw that, this girl started like crying because she was so happy. Then we were going to talent and like just saying, hey, don't you want to make people feel like this? And we'd show the reaction. Where before we're like, hey, Mr. you know, NFL player, do you want to join a platform where you can connect with, you know, fans, but we have no fans and we have no other talent on? Like, yeah, it's like a chicken and the egg problem. But once we had that first reaction video, it's like, don't you want to make people feel like that? And that's what got it going.
So, but I mean, at that point, you know, you had quit your job and you had, you know, gone to this accelerator. Was there a moment that your friends followed, or was there a moment in time when everyone was like, okay, we'll quit our jobs also and jump in with you?
Yeah, I mean, it took time. It probably, I think it probably took Devin about a month and a half. He was working at another startup to come. You know, Martin, it took about a year for him to like leave his job, you know, as an agent full time to come work on this. And like, look, I just felt like somebody had to take the first step, and I did. And you know, fortunately it's like, it worked out, you know, for at least it's been, you know, even if Cameo went to zero tomorrow, like it's been a life-changing thing. You know, my network has opened up, like I've learned so much. But you know, for this first couple of years when it's just you and a desk and you have no customers, you have no sales, it took us 6 months before we sold our first Cameo, right? Like, and you know, you're losing money every month paying engineer and you know, trying to support your lifestyle on no income. And you know, those are tough days. You rack up credit card debt. You have to be like pretty fucking risky, but I just had high conviction that it would work out.
Totally. Now, you know, a platform like Facebook and Instagram, kind of notorious for ripping off ideas, you know, Snapchat stories, now Reels, TikTok. Is this something that, you know, that you think about, maybe like, you know, what stops big tech from coming in and sort of, you know, taking the idea or taking the technology? How do you guys
look? I mean, ideas are ideas and execution is execution. So, you know, I have enough to worry about at Cameo, like versus worrying about what Instagram or Facebook or TikTok or Snapchat are going to do. I know if we build a product that people love, if we build a world-class team, if we build great relationships with our talent and our customers, you know, we're going to be just fine. You know, it's been interesting. Like today I had a conversation with Facebook and we were talking about, you know, hey, what are some cool things we could do together? Like, how do we, you know, make it easier to share? How do we, you know, make it easier to find out when your friends' birthdays are, so you know who to buy a Cameo from? Or, you know, is there a way we could open up Instagram's follower graph so you could, when you, like, we make accounts on Facebook or on Instagram, so if you're doing that, then what if you could just, you know, what if you could see all the people that you follow on Instagram on Cameo easier? So, you know, I think that all the other platforms are kind of farm systems for Cameo. They have totally different business models. Their business model are to make the platform more money. Our business model is to make the creators more money. So I think people blow up on Facebook, on Instagram, on TikTok, on Snapchat, but then they have to come to Cameo to monetize. And if we become a publicly traded company, like, people will still ask, well, what's Facebook's answer going to be? And inevitably, the bigger we get, like, there's going to be that feeling that people, you know, when things work, like, people try to come at it, but, you know, that's why, you know, this is competition. It's not like, you know, it's not like when Facebook started a social network that nobody felt they could do it, right? Snapchat came along and Instagram came along and Twitter came along and all these other platforms came along. And at the end of the day, like, if you delight users, you build a great product, like, that's all you can control. You can't control anybody else.
Totally. I mean, there were, and I think there still are, some kind of similar type products in the space, but certainly Cameo is the front runner. Why do you think you guys were able to, you know, bust ahead the competition and just stand out?
There's no real competition in the space. Like, we do more Cameos a day than every other company in the world has done in their entire history. This is a global network effect business. You know, when people see these videos, they call them Cameos. You know, like, we're the Kleenex in the space. when talent looks at our roster versus anybody else that started. Like, nobody wants to be on the second best Instagram. Nobody wants to be on the second best YouTube. Like, people want to be on the platform that they know. And, you know, it's because the supply on our platform can be get their own demand. Every cameo becomes a commercial for the next one. It starts this viral flywheel. And we just got so far in front of anybody else that had ever tried to do this, that we just found escape velocity and nobody else did. And these are winner take all markets. There's no second place in this game.
Absolutely. Okay, so when you're not working on Cameo, which I'm assuming is a 24/7 plus time job, if you have a little bit of free time, how do you like to spend your free time? I know you're cooking a lot now during quarantine. What do you like to do when you're not building a massive tech company?
Yeah, I mean, I've been cooking a little bit. You know, typically it was traveling, but that doesn't, you know, really happen anymore. When I used to fly, I had a rule where I would never get Wi-Fi on an airplane. I would either sleep or read, just depending on what my body needed that day. So I do enjoy reading. I'm reading a good book right now about the Manhattan Project. It's Chris Wallace from Fox News's book. It's called The Countdown 1945. And, you know, just learning about the Manhattan Project, and there were 250,000 people working on this, and only three people knew what was actually going on. Like, that type of stuff's fascinating for me. I'm a historian. I'm a history major. I love reading history. I love, you know, reading current events, and reading is what I do when I'm not doing that. You know, typically it might have been going to sporting events, but those aren't happening.
Is it true that you read a book a week?
I try to. I have been off of that pace since COVID, because most of my reading time was happening on airplanes, and I haven't really figured out how to kind of build that back into my daily routine when there's so much going on. Where the airplane was such a natural one, where it's like, hey, going from Chicago to LA, you know, twice a week, like, that's 8 hours of like solid reading you're doing. And I learned how to speed read as a kid, which was a great life hack. That I highly recommend.
You know, how do you learn that? How do you learn how to speed read?
You go to class. I mean, and once you learn how to do it, it'll change your life. And you actually retain the content better, and you get through it way quicker. So that's helpful. But yeah, I'm just a voracious reader, and I'm probably reading the same amount of content today. It's just like, it might be happening on Twitter and like different articles than pure books. I actually haven't made it through a book in a few weeks. I'm trying to
slacking. Come on, a few weeks. how do you pick the next book to read? Is it recommendations of friends? Do you where do you find books? I'm assuming you have a long list that you're always looking to get through.
You know, I like judging books by the cover. So I'll walk in the airport and I'll see like the Hudson books, like what looks interesting. You know, I'll see people tweeting about things, or I'll read in the, you know, Wall Street Journal book review or New York Times book review about something that's coming on. You know, a lot of the books that I've gotten, most of the books I've read lately have been about like startups and scaling businesses. And there's just like a certain roster that everybody reads. You know, it's like blitz scaling or the hard things about hard things. It's like kind of the same 0 to 1. So, you know, you make it through all those, and then, you know, at different points you try to change it up, and it's like, all right, what's something that's not about tech? You know, and the next one I'm going to read is about Genghis Khan. It seems like a lot of people are talking about this new Genghis Khan book, so I want to read that next.
Absolutely. Okay, what can we expect from Cameo in the future? I know that, you know, now Zoom is a part of it. You can do these Zoom hangs. What, any features we should be looking at in the future?
I think right now Cameo's built a great gifting experience, but we want to lean more into the for self use case as well. So I think in the future, you're going to sign on Cameo. There'll be more single player utility than there is now. And, you know, hopefully what you'll be able to do is to come on, see people that you're interested in, interact with them in ways that are having like deeper, richer conversations. And I think Cameo becomes a place to express your fandom, you know, in a bigger, better way.
Absolutely. Well, Steven, I know you're insanely busy. Thanks so much for taking the time. This has been a pleasure, and excited to see what you guys are doing, because I feel like all my friends in Nashville who has, you know, slight credibility, any artistry, anything, they're all hopping on Cameo and they're all saying, oh, I'm on Cameo. You got to get on Cameo also. So it's been really cool to see. And I know it's just the tip of the iceberg for you guys. So
excited to see what's around the corner. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Be well. Talk to you soon.
Thanks again for tuning in, and thanks again to Steven for taking the time out of his busy schedule to talk with me. Great conversation. Thanks again to everyone who tuned in. The Zach Kuhn Show is mixed by Sam Heyman, and our theme music is by Justin Johnson. If you want more content from us, you can subscribe to our newsletter at NashvilleBriefing.com, or you can follow us on socials, everything at Nashville Briefing. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Bye.